areas. There was a bill that some of you are familiar with that was passed last session that provided Rural Health Association funds to the tune of $15 million to try to keep all of the rural health healthy. And that money is currently locked up by governor's edict. It's frozen and cannot be expended, although much of those funds have already been received by the state. So the longer those are locked up and not released, or if they turn up being used for something else, you can also look for many failures in the rural parts of the state. I would hope that when you folks make the tough decisions that you are going to have to make sooner or later, that maintaining the funding for the Oregon Health Plan, at least at the current level, is an important and positive, will have an important and positive effect on the economy of the state, and the hospitals will continue to be part of the economic solution, not part of the economic problem. Thank you, Madam Chair, for allowing me the time to make these comments. I'd be happy to respond to any questions.
Thank you very much. I think you're off the hook. Thank you for coming. Chair calls the Oregon Forest Industries Council and the Oregon Small Woodlands Association. On the deck is the Oregon Transit Association. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Chair Morgan, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Christina McNitt. I'm representing the Oregon Small Woodlands Association, which is a statewide trade association of family forest landowners. And with me is my colleague from the Oregon Forest Industries Council, Ray Wilkerson, who represents the industrial side of the forest landowning community. We appreciate the difficult task that's before you. Every state program has a constituency behind it who can and will resist budget reductions. Yet given the situation we're facing, doing nothing and keeping every budget whole is simply not an option. What you do have to do is not going to be fun, and it's not going to be easy, and we recognize and appreciate that. Having said that, however, we're here today to ask that the Department of Forestry's 2001-03 budget be kept as intact as possible. There are several reasons for this request.
That's my cue, Madam Chair. I'm Ray Wilkerson with the Oregon Forest Industries Council, and I'd also like to express my appreciation to you and our appreciation for the magnitude and difficulty of the task you have before you, and also for the fact you've had a long week and probably one that hasn't been a lot of fun, so we'll be as brief as possible. We're here basically today to defend the budget that was appropriated in the regular session for the Oregon Department of Forestry, and to give you a few reasons why, if it's all possible to avoid reducing that budget, we would ask you to give due consideration of that. We recognize that might not be possible, but we think there's a number of things that we'd like to have you keep in mind. The first one, you know better than anyone, Madam Chair, and that is, given your assignment during the regular session, that is that natural resource agencies in general do not get very much general fund money. Historically, it was a paltry, it's been 10 or 12 years ago, the total for all natural resource agencies was around 2%, but over the last 10 years, that's been on a downward spiral. I think the total right now is about 1.3% of the state's general fund budget for all natural resource agencies combined. So the reality is there's just not a lot of money there to solve the problem that we collectively need to solve. Forestry Department in particular has been squeezed on general fund over the last 10 or 20 years. Attached to the written statement that we passed out, there's three charts that kind of illustrate that. The first one shows in constant dollars general fund appropriations to the Department of Forestry over the last 10 or 12 years, and it indicates that there was actually more general fund dollars 10 years ago in that agency than there is now. And the second one deals with the fire portion of the budget, and the third one deals with employees at the Department of Forestry. And actually, 20 years ago, they had more FTE there than they do now. So, and as I'm sure you all know, the issues that forestry in general, both from the private side and the public side, that have come up in the last 10-20 years have been difficult and controversial and complex, and the challenges have increased exponentially at a time when the resources are flat or declining. I guess another point we'd like to make is that these general fund dollars, as few as they are, have a significant leveraging effect in other areas, and it's not just the Forestry Department, but the Forestry Department is the one we're most familiar with. And as an example, the fire budget, which we view as particularly critically important, and the state has viewed as particularly critically important forever, basically every dollar that's appropriated by the legislature for forest fire protection leverages another $2 in other sources. There's a direct match with private landowner assessments. And then there's also, the state also protects forest land owned by the federal government on the west side that's managed by the Bureau of Land Management. And they pay the state to protect their lands also. And if you reduce the general fund based on that contract, those payments go down also. So basically every dollar that you have to take from fire from general fund removes $3 of protection. The forest practices program is another example. There's a match there with harvest taxes, 60% general fund, 40% harvest taxes. You take a general fund dollar out, you take 40 cents, additional 40 cents, or whatever you do the math from the harvest tax, because it can't exceed 40%. Just to sum up, in our written testimony, we've listed a number of bullets of where, despite the pretty severe constraint on resources in recent years, where the Department of Forestry has been asked to do a lot more with a lot less. And a lot of those have to do with dealing with the federal government in the last 10 years in particular, and a number of issues that have come up where we've basically had to, the state of Oregon basically had to defend ourselves from some pretty ridiculous regulatory ideas coming out of federal agencies relating to natural resources and the management of land management issues in Oregon. And the State Department of Forestry has done a wonderful job of helping us all come up with a good counterpoints and arguments to these federal agencies on why some of their ideas are really not very good ideas. There's other issues, forest health issues in eastern Oregon that the state forest department is very active in. The state salmon plan, Oregon salmon plan, of course, the state forest department has been a leader in making that a success. But a lot of effort, a lot of resources, a lot of time gone into that. And then the final one we list there is just changing public values. The state's changing the demographics of the state, becoming more urban, more disconnected with the land, less direct association with our heritage, agriculture, or forestry. And that creates a lot of pressure. And the Department of Forestry has a responsibility to educate and help interact with the state population as a whole. The most acute example of that recently is on state forest lands, where the Tillamook State Forest, for instance, where there's been a lot of controversy over state timber sales, and that takes a lot of time to manage that in an effort and resources to manage that in a prudent way. So those are some of the reasons we believe it we would ask you to think about, I guess, when you get down to the tough part of this assignment next month, and looking at the Forestry Department budget in particular. And Christina's got a couple of comments she'd like to add to that.
Thank you, Ray. In conclusion, we'd just like to recognize the Department of Forestry has done a commendable job of servicing its constituencies and meeting increased public needs without receiving a corresponding increase in public resources. Recognizing that general fund reductions may be unavoidable, however, we would like to recommend to the committee that you explore the use of other resource-specific funds to compensate for any such general fund reductions. In particular, ballot measure $66 and National Marine Fisheries Service dollars might be considered. While there are legal, political, and constitutional restraints on the use of such funds, the Department of Forestry and other natural resource agencies are heavily involved in the implementation of ballot measure 66 and of the Oregon Salmon Plan. As a result, these funds from these sources already flow through to these agencies to some extent. The question to consider is whether additional dollars from these funds could be provided without running afoul of Measure 66 or of legal constraints placed on the use of the Federal Salmon Plan dollars. It would particularly make sense to us if, rather than funding new programs, that these dollars be used to maintain existing and valued programs that otherwise might fall victim to the Budget Act. And we appreciate you considering these views and listening to our statement.
I would like to comment on this. I think that you brought forward a real opportunity that we need to very carefully consider as we move forward here, and that is the fact that even though there is only a small percentage of general fund in all of the natural resource type agencies, we have the opportunity here to offset some of that general fund with federal monies that are being received and lottery monies that are dedicated to Oregon Plan habitat recovery issues for wildlife and for fish and water quality issues. And the bottom line is that the state of Oregon received $6 million from the National Marine Fisheries Service while we were in session. We just gave the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board the ability to apply for an additional $6 million, which they have just received or in the process of receiving, and there is another $15 million on the table in the federal budget that is unfolding right now. And that's just money that's coming through the National Marine Fisheries Service. That's a significant source of revenue to the state. On top of that, there are about upwards of $50 million right now in lottery funds that have been that are available in this area also. And I think that Ms. McNitt has done a good job in saying that there are some constraints around the use of that money. But certainly when we're looking at issues where general fund dollars can be used to fund K-12 education or social service programs, we need to take advantage of every opportunity that we can find to use those federal dollars and those lottery dollars to pay for Oregon Plan type activities in natural resource agencies and then free those general fund dollars back in onto the table so that we can discuss them in our rebalance. And I think I really appreciate you bringing that to the table and laying that out as a card, because I think that though it may not be the most powerful card in the deck in terms of the rebalance, it certainly is a significant one. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Chair calls the Oregon Transit Association, and on deck is Associated Oregon Industries.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Roger Martin, and I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Transit Association. I want to thank you for this opportunity. I won't compliment all of you, but I would like to compliment you, Madam Chair. It's a real honor to be named chairman of a committee, but as I learned a long time ago, you have to stay here while all the rest of your committee can come and go. And I appreciate the fact you've kept all this in motion. I'm sure that after a week of testimony from a variety of people, you would agree with me that the project, the exercise of attempting to cut the budget, is far from the simplistic effort that someone like Bill Sizemore would describe it to be. I heard him on the television the other night saying it's not a cut in the budget, it's a decrease of the increase, which is a wonderful little political statement to make, but he hasn't sat here and had to go through the exercise you've had to go through. The Oregon Transit Association really appreciates the fact that the last two sessions of the legislature have appropriated about $9 million each biennium for the transportation of elderly and disabled people in the state of Oregon. That's a program that's in all 36 counties. There are hundreds of volunteer, mainly volunteer organizations. The money that was appropriated goes to buy the capital equipment, the vans to transport. The actual effort is put on mainly by volunteers, and I'll just give you one example. This year, the Oregon Transit Association gave our Volunteer of the Year award to a woman in Baker County, and when they started to read her background, I did not know her. I started doing arithmetic. She spent 25 years in the military, retired, moved to Baker County 30 years ago, and has spent the last 30 years driving people around. She's put up an astronomical number of miles and hours, all as a volunteer. She was in tears when she came up, and I was just thankful that we don't really get real tough on taking driver's license away from seniors, because she's approaching the age where, but she's still doing it. And this is the kind of thing that goes on. I bring this up. The Department of Transportation really only has two areas where there are any general funds involved. One of them is this area, and the other is the Willamette Valley train. And I think we're all concerned that the governor or the department might decide to make a major cut in the program, and I certainly hope you will protect us. We expect that you're going to have to cut. We understand that. We just seek uniformity. And the one other thing I'd like to say, if I could take my transit hat off, Madam Chair, is that yesterday I attended a meeting in Representative Hobson's district, chaired by her aide since she was here, that dealt with an issue in the city of Warrenton that involves several state agencies. And I would like to say to you that I hope when you come to looking at the DEQ budget that you're very careful about how much you cut in the enforcement area. And it sounds strange coming from a lobbyist, because picking on the DEQ has been a kind of a habit around here for dozens of years. But I can tell you that the meeting illustrated the perfect blend of the private public sector trying to solve a problem. I represent a fish processor, a Sereni processing plant that has a discharge problem down there. The DEQ could not be more cooperative in trying to work out a solution to that. along with the Department of Economic Development and Oregon State University, and that other area you've heard about, those agricultural and experimental stations, the Seafood Center in Astoria is contributing a tremendous amount towards the whole process of manufacturing surimi, and then how to get all the surplus protein, the wastewater, out of it. And I have the highest praise for several state agencies that have been very helpful in that project. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Questions or comments? Representative Note.
Madam Chair, my mind is wandering. Could you instruct the witness to start over again? It was those pants that that got me going. You know, I couldn't tell if he was going golfing or, you know, what the deal was there.
I see what
I'm not going to touch that one. Yeah. Chair calls Mr. Buttrick from Associated Oregon Industries. On deck is the Oregon Student Association.
Hide your pants, whatever you do.
Well, Madam Chair and members, I'm Richard Buttrick with Associated Oregon Industries, and I would like to echo the earlier testimony about not taking driver's licenses away from senior people.
Thank you.
I hope that will be the case. We all know that Oregon is in a serious recession, and this affects our government, affects business. We have $725 million, maybe more, to find, 6% cut. Businesses are facing the same thing, and all you have to do is pick up the Oregonian or any other paper any day and find out how serious that is. Thousands and thousands of people are being laid off all over the state, which of course affects AOI, affects the business community, affects employees, affects the state revenues. So we are making tough decisions. Government, as I say in my testimony here before you, is a bit different. It's diffused on the command and control, and every one of these programs has a constituency, and as I say, you've probably heard from all of them or most of all of them by now. Having said that, I'm trying to come to you today with a few concepts that might be of some help to solve the problem. I did have the opportunity to testify in the Senate recently on job stimulation, economic stimulation. I've attached that testimony for your interest behind what I've given you. So what can we do about it? So here's a few ideas. We have two rainy day funds already for schools. One is the Common School Fund. It's $550 million in it. It's against $1.1 billion in assets. And the other is over $200 million in the fund that is 15% off the top for lottery. So one concept might be, and you know, there's a lot of concern about schools, and Ozzie was right, it's $5.2 billion, a lot of money. But if you were going to cut the school budget, you could backfill it in that way. Perhaps you could take $200 million out and give $100 million back. $100 million against $5.2 billion is a relatively modest cut. Or you could take $200 million out, gain the cash, and put $200 million back in out of the $750 million that's accessible to you. And just those two funds. The State Land Board controls the Common School Fund. That, in 1999, that Common School Fund was tapped by the legislature. Let's see if I can remember that number. $74 million was tapped at that time. And the rules were changed by the legislature at the time, too. So I think you have the power to do that if that's what you elect to do. Another perhaps more controversial idea is the Common School Fund owns the Elliott State Forest. It's got over 90,000 acres in it. It's worth $500 million. The return on that $500 million is very modest. You'd probably be better off to sell the Elliott State Forest and put it in other kinds of money-making concerns, and that's another source of money for schools. Forest is susceptible to insects, fire. In some respects, it's a more risky investment than perhaps has been considered in the past. It's an idea. You have $82 million in the Tobacco Settlement Fund. again, an option for how you're going to use it. Medicare upper payment limit is 118 million that's available. That's 200 million just in those two cases. One of the ones that's my personal favorite is the unfilled positions. And this comes out of legislative fiscal office. I had it checked. I'd made up some numbers, checked them. And so these are their numbers as of last January. There were 3,444 positions exclusive of higher education unfilled as of December 2000. Now, I don't completely understand this, but they say that some of these positions are double filled. And so somehow that reduces that 3,000 unfilled positions, and perhaps you can think about what that really means. But anyway, if you take them all out, you still have, according to them, 1,463 vacancies, and they estimate that the average position, including benefits, is $52,500 a year. So, if you multiply $52,500 a year times 1,463 positions that are unfilled, basically you'd be giving pink slips to people that aren't there, you would earn yourself $76,807,500 per year. Now, if you lose the higher number, the one that isn't double filled, multiplied by $52,500, you would gain $159,810,000 per year for unfilled positions. We would recommend, as most businesses do, that, and we've done it ourselves in our little place, that you reduce travel by 20%. Again, that saves $870,000 and $9.4 million in other fund savings. Educational Service Districts, Madam Chair, which I've debated with one of your members here earlier, Thompson, nevertheless, she doesn't agree with that point of view. But educational service districts, although providing no doubt a valuable service, perhaps is a place that you could look to save some money. And $10 million would be about an 11% cut, and you could consolidate even further. I know you've made some efforts along those lines already, but on the prioritization basis, you might want to consider whether or not that is worth spending. You're going to need either this legislature or the next governor or the next legislature or one, three, or four legislatures from now is going to have to look at PERS. It's $7 billion in the hole. $7 billion in the hole. And that's an old number. God knows what it is right now with the stock market having not recovered. So let's say everything was the same as it was a year ago at $7 billion. You're going to have to move, I believe, long-term to a third tier, not affecting current employees. Never been our recommendation to break a deal is a deal. But, and this would take 20 years to solve itself, but you have to start sometime. And if you went to a defined contribution plan, like virtually every business in the state has, instead of a defined benefit plan, and you picked off, say, 5% a year, as you go, you could probably solve that problem. Otherwise, it's going to be musical chairs, and the music stops, there's going to be a chair for somebody. And that has not happened yet. An attempted, politically difficult, but it's a serious problem looking straight at us all. And finally, there's the motor pool. And I won't take credit for this. It was Speaker Kleino, that had this idea some time ago. Now she's in the Senate, of course. But the fact is that you can, if you on a prioritization basis, you can save $20 to $25 million by selling the pool and going to a private sector contract deal with people that need to use a car. Save the trucks, people put sand on the roads, keep everything that you need to keep. But the motor pool's got hundreds of cars and just go right out there anytime you want to look at it, and it's sitting there doing nothing. $20-25 million. When you talk to and listen to, as I know you have been, endlessly no doubt, of the concerns that many people genuinely have, whether it's about hospital beds or about older people or about schools or about higher education or high tuition or whatever it is, $20 million would have an effect on those, and that's what prioritization is all about. So I believe that these examples, I don't want to overstate examples of choices that you might have, but if you do add them up, it easily reaches $720 million without raising taxes and, really without cutting anything. Thank you very much.
Representative Starr.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Mr. Buttrick, I read ahead and read your stimulus testimony as well. It was interesting to me that there was little in that concerning the current cost of electricity. What is your reaction to some kind of, tax credit based on a number of employees for business as a energy reduction measure of some kind, energy cost reduction measure?
Madam Chair, Representative, the reason that was omitted from my testimony, as I was told and happened, that the next day there was going to be a whole day dedicated to energy, and therefore I didn't repeat what was going to be said. The energy issue of 53% increase for businesses and schools, and 30% for residences, is an absolute disaster at this time. Absolute disaster. And it's going to create a situation wherein more people are going to get laid off, which starts this cycle. You know, when we talk about public-private partnerships, that's exactly what we mean. I mean, to the extent that we have a good economy and people are working, the state's in a lot better shape, and that's part of the problem we have right now. Solutions. We've had, to put it mildly, a debate, I guess you'd say, with Enron PGE and with the PUC on mitigating factors. We've asked for reconsideration. That's been turned down. We have asked to stretch out the increase, and so far that hasn't happened, although I understand that's under discussion. We've objected to any stretch out that then charges us interest beyond what the current rate is, which is very low. So we don't want a stretch out to be a profit center for Enron PGE at this moment. As far as tax credits are concerned, the stimulus ideas here, Representative, admittedly, by demand, were short-term solutions, 2-3 years out, with the hope that our economy would pick back up. So that was the charge that I was given. And so I hadn't really thought about tax credits on a specific issue like energy. We've been sort of approaching it on a different basis. Now, PGE is going to get sold. There may be some mitigating factors in this sale. It is, I think, on a fairly fast track that may reduce those rates to some extent. And probably, in the stream of things, that will be the most likely thing that will mitigate against some of these increases. I've told the senators, I'll tell you, that we've invited Mr. Dick Wrighton, chairman of Northwest Natural, to come to our board meeting on January 18th, and he's prepared to instruct us and make commitments. He's said commitments to the business community and everybody else at the same time. And so following that presentation on the 18th of January, I might have a snappier, more authoritative answer for you.
Thank you. One thing I would like to add, too, in relation to comments on the Elliott State Forest is that there is another way to maximize the money that we can take out of the Commonwealth Trust Fund, and that's by maximizing the management of the state-owned timberlands that go into that fund more for timber production than we have been doing. And I think that that's something that the committee should consider too, that there are, within the Oregon Forest Practices Act and the act that the private sector does forest management strategies under the auspices of plenty of environmental considerations to protect water quality and protect wildlife habitat and fisheries habitat, and that if we were